Just saying, we came back here last year for about 4 or 5 months. So some of you would have seen us coming in and out and thinking what was going on. So we went through a bit of a difficult phase with where we were, and we thought we'd come here because, in many ways, this has been home. And this was a very accepting space for those 4 or 5 months, which we appreciated. But then we went to a particular funeral and felt like, oh, we should go back. So that was the story. So we're back here today. So I just wanted to give that a little bit of landing. As one of you said so kindly at the time when we were here, are you coming here? This is where all good pastors come to die. Which I found incredibly encouraging and thought, yeah, that's what we want to come here for. Didn't feel like death at all coming here, but never mind. I need to be quick. Can we go to these slides? They're up. Great. I got this picture this morning. So just to show this is Bangladesh. The two people on this circle is Heather McLeod, who used to work for World Vision, looking after child-friendly spaces and the safety and welfare of children in institutions, and Ruby Duncan next to her, who is our chair of our board. They are in Bangladesh right now working with schools and hostels to make sure that the policies they have, and they do have the policies and they look really nice in the filing cabinet in Dhaka, are actually being lived out in terms of child welfare, child support and child care. We know in New Zealand that there has been various things happen in faith-based organisations that are not great, and so we're trying to ensure the things that we're supporting overseas do have good policies, but actually good practices. And so they're there doing that right now. So I thought I'd show you that photo. We're here connecting with mutuality today is the kind of theme. And in terms of Arotahi, that has been a really key part of who we are. When we started our restructuring in 2022, our key theme was mutual gospel renewal. So we've been trying to work out how do we do mutual gospel renewal that it changes individuals in different contexts in the world and changes us in New Zealand, both at an individual level and at a church level. Really important. And for us, our focus has been is on the least reached and the most vulnerable, where vulnerability is measured by poverty or by persecution or by both. That's kind of what we focus on there. I wanted to start with just a few trends that are happening in the world in terms of global mission. The first few are being cited by missiologists, so they're true. The last two are more Alan Jamieson version. There's still a great need in the world, and I think the West forgets this. And all our desire to do it better and to do with greater quality, we forget the huge amount of need that still exists in the world. Things have moved. It is no longer the Western church to the majority world, but very much from the majority world to the majority world, or the majority world to the Western world. Nagaland in northern India has now got the highest per capita global missionaries of anywhere in the world. And probably, and I'm not being silly here, half of us don't know where Nagaland is. But they have 10 families in the church looking after one missionary overseas. That's how they do it. So you just divide it up into tens, your job to look after them. From sending to collaborating, we've talked a lot about this today, and this has come through strongly. The idea of sending is one thing with, you know, the basket full of information or goodies or money or whatever, but to actually collaborating in such a way that there is fundamental transformation for both parties. A real move from outputs to impact. So instead of counting how many people are going to church or how many people are saved or how many people are doing whatever, how many people are getting fresh water, more to what is the transformational basis in their lives beyond the actual product or change that we can measure? What's fundamentally happening intergenerationally and community-wide that is bringing some clear transformation? From breathing in to breathing out, Westerners went with a lot of breathing out, and they're actually going, hey, there's so much. As Alistair was saying from Ephron, so much for us to learn in the Western context from people from the majority world. So much to learn. And this is one that just strikes me again and again and again. Again and again, just the attitude to suffering, struggle, and difficulty is so fundamentally different. Suze, are you related to Chris Jensen. I worked that out. Yeah, he must be. Yeah, because he's got the same parents. Yeah, okay. Yeah. 6-1, from primary calling individuals to calling churches. What we've done in the West for so long, I'm just putting it together. It's all right, you know. Yeah. What we've done typically in the West over the last 4 or 5 decades is someone in the church feels a call to go somewhere, and the rest of the church gets behind them to support them to achieve that. It's a really, really good thing. But there is a move more towards churches as a collective owning a people and place globally, which goes for further than a particular missionary or missionary family's engagement. It's broader and has greater longevity, and it's a growing trend. This is me. I go all around the country with New Zealand Baptist churches. In fact, I'll go from the north to the south this month, the whole lot, and collectively. And we pride ourselves as New Zealand Baptists on having a DNA of mission. But I think we have lost our RNA. And my understanding of the biology and chemistry, which I have never studied since high school, is that it's the RNA that actually makes the DNA work. I hope there's some scientists in the room who are going to nod at me. But without the RNA, the DNA just sits in our genetic structure, but doesn't actually come to life and get passed from one movement to another. Is it? Anyone scientific? Is it rough enough? Well, thank you. You're no help at all. Right? You've been in the right family, but no help. But anyway, and the last goal, and this is what I really want to talk about today, the goal is friendship. Friendship transforms us both. So I want to talk today briefly, Rochelle, about friendship. C.S. Lewis wrote a quite famous book about the four loves, and it's kind of stood as a classic. And in his book, The Four Loves, he says there are four different ways that we can love. There is storge, affection or familial love that happens in families. There is eros, where we fall in love and we want to be united with the person and the heart runs strong. And all, you know what I mean. Yep. There's philia, friendship love. And there is agape, costly, unconditional giving to others. You know those sort of four different ways of loving? Make sense? Well, what C.S. Lewis said, no, sorry, what Jesus said quite often was about friendship. And what C.S. Lewis says is that friendship is the highest love, the highest form of love. And Jesus talked about friends quite a lot, friends who lay down their lives, being a friend with sinners and drunkards, publicans, Lazarus being his friend. But most famously, he says in two passages, this is the first, I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I have learned from my Father, I have made known to you. Just quickly, what is the difference between a servant and a friend? Firstly, call them out. When you think of the relationship between a servant and their boss, what do you think of as the characteristics of that relationship? Following orders, yep.
Power.
Hierarchical. Distance. Anything else? Sorry? One-way communication. Yep. No choice. Okay, let's swap. Friends. What's the characteristic and nature of a friendship relationship? It's mutual. Yeah. Yep. People. Yeah, equal power. Yeah. Vulnerable. Enjoyable. Thanks, Chu. Thank you. Yeah.
You're not tied to it.
You can leave. That's a fundamental shift, eh? Someone said that I did my background in stages of faith. One of the crucial journeys in the stages of anyone's faith is like God wants to be our friend, not just to boss us around. Anyway, so that seems to be really important. C.S. Lewis said this. He saw it as the most spiritual of the natural loves. Interesting. He said it's based on shared truth and common vision rather than biological need or romantic passion. It involves a meeting of minds and souls around shared interests or causes. It's the least possessive and most free of the natural loves. And lastly, friends stand side by side looking toward a common goal rather than just at each other. Friends stand side by side looking at a common goal, not just each other. The highest of loves, C.S. Lewis would say, is friendship. And I think the maturity of mission engagement is truly to have friends from quite different contexts, quite different spaces in the world, quite different socioeconomic spaces, and yet to be genuine friends. That I would want to suggest is the goal of mission. In the Four Loves, Lewis said, friendship is unnecessary. Like philosophy, like art, it has no survival value. Rather, it is one of those things that give value to survival. Does that resonate? Okay, one more. Friendship is the least natural of loves, the least instinctive, organic, biological, gregarious, and necessary. It is least commerce with our nerves. There is nothing throaty about it, nothing that quickens the pulse or turns you red and pale, unlike Eros, perhaps. Jesus, in his last encounter in John's Gospel, encounters Peter. And Peter has failed Jesus. And there's this beautiful example of Jesus meeting him on the beach, having cooked a barbecue, and then sitting down and talking with Peter. And there's this three-way interaction. And in the Greek, there's a key word about love. And it says, when they'd finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus replied, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. First time he says, do you agape me? Do you have an unconditional love? Second time, do you agape me? Third time, Jesus says, do you philia me? The risen Christ still desires friendship. And I think if it's good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for us. The goal of mission is genuine side-by-side friendship. Now, to end, my first journey to the Philippines, the days that Alistair was a key leader in the life of servants, was to go to servants. Sandra and I were relatively newly married, and where church was going to the Philippines with a team, and we said, oh, yeah, we'll go. Stupid decision. Because we spent 3 weeks in a squatter community just outside, exactly the sort of community that Andrew was talking about, a relocation community on the edge of industrial area. And we met a man there who looked after us. His name was Mong Karading. Mong Karading was, I don't know, 30, 40 years older than us. And he had the shack that we were staying in. And the nearest Kiwis were maybe 2 km away. And Mong Karading was looking after us. Mong Karading made a lot of fun of us in the best possible sense. He'd say, you go to bed. You go to bed. Make Filipino child. He was appalled that we'd been married 2 or 3 years and we didn't have children. You go to bed. You make Filipino child. And then we'd lie in bed, we'd hear through the wall, them talking about Alan Sandra. Oh, they'd all crack up laughing then. Alan Sandra. Oh. But Mong Karading used to wait for us when we would go out at night through the dangerous part of walking back and walk us back at night, sometimes waiting 2 or 3 hours for us to arrive just to walk us back to his house. That was friendship on his behalf. We went back with a team, which I think involved some people from here, but I can't remember, in 93, 94. And I stayed with the family. And on the night that we left, yeah, you were there, eh? Yeah. So Fally and Roger were the family that I stayed with. And on the night we left, we did a bit of a thank you party. Some of you have been here long enough to hear the story 25 times already. And we went back, and I carried one of their children back because Roger was thoroughly drunk and causing a bit of trouble. And we got back to the house, and eventually we went to bed. And he died that night. And I always felt tremendous responsibility for Fally, the mum, and the six kids. So for about 15 years, we gave financially to them. But we never made a friendship. And I don't know what happened to them. I don't know what happened to the wee girl that really kind of touched my heart in carrying them back. And I regret that. I regret that we gave. That's great. But I regret that I don't know what happened to them. And the friendship opportunity was missed because I didn't pursue it. Yes, Rochelle, I'm old and I'll retire at the end of this year. But I've made two friends in this journey. And I think these two friends will carry on as friendships beyond employment. And one is Samuel in Tripura in northeast India. And we've got to be good mates. It's him with his family on the left. Thank you with that. I appreciate your help. Yeah, I'll try and walk across the road on my own on the way home. So Samuel and his family. And we've made a really good friendship. He's been here for 3 months. I've been there with him a number of times. And he's doing his PhD now on the history of women missionaries from New Zealand into Tripura from an indigenous perspective, the good, the bad, the ugly. And we've teed up now for a woman to do a PhD from the New Zealand perspective of those women's lives. And they're working together. It's great. The other one's Mark. And this photo was taken over the peninsula last year with Sean and others. And Mark having a delightful time with you guys. But the friendships fall last. And that's the thing I treasure most now. To be transformed to such an extent that we have friends in the global context who live different lives, but nevertheless are our brothers and sisters in Christ and truly friends. Thank you. It's been fun to be here. Bless you heaps.